Welcome. To the Flower Power Podcast. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Flower Power Podcast. I'm excited about this one. I had a chance to sit down last night with the one, the only, three-time current reigning World Highland Games champion, John Van Buren, and we just talked shop. We just talked Highland Games, and I had a lot of fun just kind of BSing with one of my good friends out on the pro circuit, if you will. This is my first quote-unquote virtual podcast where I had somebody call in, and I think it went really well, so hopefully I can do some more of these. Obviously, I'd love to have John on again. Some of my other friends out in the games or ADs, you know, other athletes in the sport. So hopefully this is one, the first of many of this style of podcast. And I hope you guys enjoy it. I really enjoyed it. So without further ado, John Van Buren.
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't heard that before.
Yeah.
My buddy, I think he just has like a soundboard and he records it. And I was fucking around singing Creed when we were playing games, and next thing I know, I hear my voice through his microphone, and he auto-tuned me, and I'm like, oh. I didn't think I needed auto-tune, but, you know, thank you.
Nice. That's funny. I don't know how to do any of this, so this is all brand new to me. I've been on Discord once, so.
Well, I think the sound quality sounds good. I've never done any, obviously, podcasting, but I've had a couple recordings from there, and I thought it was like, yeah, I think it's a pretty good place to meet rather than doing like Zoom or a Zoom even thing or Teams or whatever.
All of it's a thing. All of it's a thing.
Still a thing.
All right. So we have John Van Buren joining us on the Flower Power Podcast. What's Hello. Up, John? Recently retired.
Retired is a strong word. But it is kind of open, so maybe it is. I don't know. I kind of feel like it's just going to be a year, but, you know, you never know what's going to happen in a year.
Well, if it's anything like me, when I took my year off, it was, I'm going to take a year off, and then about halfway through that, I said, fuck it, I'm done. And then about 4 months before the season started, I was like, nah, just kidding, I'm coming back. So
and you came back better than ever.
Probably going to be similar, I believe. I don't think you're done yet.
No.
I don't think you're done.
I don't think so either. But, like, I've got to jump on everything I've kind of wanted to do in this year off. I'm like, all right, let me lose some weight. Let me see what I'm like again at, like, I had a goal at, like, 280. I'm already at, like, 285.
What were you at before?
Walking around in games, I would be around 310 to 315.
Okay.
Yeah, and a lot of that was creatine I learned, because like I lost 10 pounds in a week and a half. I'm like, oh, this is going to be easy.
Oh, I'm just holding on to some water weight, no big deal.
Yeah, I'm just going to pee this out. I'll be fine.
But I actually have never consistently taken creatine until about a month ago.
Oh, man, it's crazy how much of a difference it makes. I mean, coming from somebody who doesn't use anabolics, I can't say it's I can't compare it, but like I know I went to the gym for the first time like 3 days ago, and part of that's because my shoulder is still fucked up from Pleasanton.
Really?
Like, bench. I'm gonna get checked out at the beginning of the new year, because I'm like, this is ridiculous. But training in a completely different style, to where I'm like, I should train for some sort of endurance, because I have none. Like, my muscular endurance is shot, my cardio is shot, like, and now my strength is shot too.
Well, why don't you come up to Colorado Springs and train at 7,000 feet with me? You'll get it back real quick.
Get those red blood cells flowing. Yeah, no, I threw 225 on bench, and it was sore on the shoulder, but also like this at a 10. I'm like, oh god, I was able to do like 24 a couple months ago, and then after that, after I burn myself out, and I'm trying not to take those 4 minute rests between heavy sets, I'm like, went back to 225, maybe a minute later, 2 minutes later, only got four. Like, okay.
Solid.
Dropped it down to 185. I'm like, this is embarrassing, going below two plates for me, but, you know, only got another four. I'm like, oh god. Like, I don't like this. I'm about to quit my weight loss program right now.
Shoot, maybe he won't come back.
I'm gonna be small, dude. But
no, that's all right. You'll be all right. I felt the exact same way when I took that year off. I literally did nothing weight room wise for 8-9 months.
Yeah.
So like that first month back in the weight room, I was like, do I really want to be doing this?
This is a long road back. Yeah, I'm in the throes of it right now, but I'm also like, okay, I'm excited to like, I think I'm going to do a jiu-jitsu class tomorrow. I don't know if I'm going to join a gym because like it's expensive. I'm like, oh, my coworker does it. And he's like, yeah, it's $45 a week. And I'm like,
a week?
I'm like, my gym is $45 a month.
Jesus Christ.
Like, is it that important to learn how to put somebody in an arm bar? I could probably YouTube some of this.
You've been listening to too much Joe Rogan.
I think so. But it sounds fun. I was like, yeah, I need to find something else to keep me busy and stay in somewhat shape. And now's the time to try new things and see what else I like.
Yeah. So what prompted this this year off? So like mine was obviously injury.
Yeah.
What prompted this year off for you?
Well, there would be times in games where I'd be, you know, I'd be around and I'd be like, that sudden realization of what you're doing. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I love doing this. Don't get me wrong. But also like, we're in the field. We're athletes more so than we are Scottish, I don't know, Scottish heritage enthusiasts, I'd say.
Like, speak for yourself.
Okay. For me anyway. I'm like, listen, I'm not pretending to be Scottish. I'm just really good at this and I like doing it. But a lot of it was just, honestly, having a kid changes everything. Like,
yeah,
2023 was a hard year because, I mean, a couple things. I mean, I had a job that was, my company got bought out. Not my company, the company I worked for. And so I hopped on with this new company for a year. I was like, let's try it out. And I was miserable, completely miserable. So like, I found a lot of value, self-worth, I guess, in the games and how I could throw, because it was the only thing that I did that I liked and actually brought in a little bit of money. Like, not, you know how much money, not much money, but money.
Yeah.
But
something.
It was a combination of that and being like, I need to spend time with my family. I need to start being able to use PTO to travel with them while Bo is, you know, starting to become more conscious and more fun as a toddler. But part of it's also like, I need to kind of find my self-worth outside of throwing. And I've been doing it for so long that I'm like, I've been throwing since middle school. Like, how am I gonna divert from this? But I think it'll be worthwhile. It'll be a healthy experience for me too. I need to do other things and kind of see what life is all about outside of throwing heavy weights and having fun.
Do you plan on staying like engaged with the games this year? Or are you kind of just burning it out?
No, I am 100% keeping up with like everything that's going on.
Okay.
I'm already looking at Worlds next year. I'm like, all right, who's it going to be? It's just so interesting to have a look kind of from the outside in and more of it as an enthusiast. Cause I'm like, all right, who are the competitors? Who do I think is going to win? Kyle's got a great shot. Vlad's got a great shot. Damien's always in the mix. Glenn can be up there. I'm like, what does each person need to do to win? Because this is the thought process I would have, even in deep into off season. I would constantly obsess and think about it. Like, oh, I saw Kyle post a video of weights. I'm like, okay, where is he going to be at in weights? I'm like, oh shit, he's got a good lightweight. I'm like, where is he going to beat me in heavyweight? Maybe, probably. Oh fuck, Vlad's got gray hammers right now. I'm like, okay. What do I need to do? What do I need to fix with my game to be a winner, I guess, and to be competitive? And what do I need to not touch? And I would kind of base my, not necessarily my weightlifting or my training off of that, but my few practices that I would take.
Okay. Let's get this straight.
I say I'm notorious for this. We can go. Yeah.
How many practices a week do you say you would have on average?
It depends on the year. What year was it? Was it 20? I think 23. I almost entirely did gym work because I found more value in being strong. Like for some reason I could just retain technique. Maybe it's 22. I can't remember if it was 22 or 23. I'm pretty sure it was 23. But last year I definitely practiced more. I spent more time working on hammers, especially because I was like, this is my weak point, and this is the key to the championships for me.
Yeah.
So I think last year I probably practiced 2 times a week, but I lifted at least 3.
Okay.
So, and that was more so leading up to the game. Like if I was like 2-3 weeks out, I would be, I'd be definitely throwing more. If it was like kind of back to back games, I probably wouldn't practice all that much. I'd be like, okay, let's maintain myself in the gym. And if I'm doing stuff, if I'm practicing any sort of throws, might be like once a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm notorious for not practicing a whole lot and somehow retaining it. And that was kind of me through college, which is weird because I'd practice a lot in college, obviously. I mean, if you're throwing, you're practicing every day.
Yeah.
But I remember a time in discus where I hurt my finger and didn't practice discus for months. And then when I felt good enough to come back, I was like, oh, I am 3 feet away from my personal best on this first throw. I don't know how I fixed whatever technique, but somehow I did. And there we go. I like this. So
that's interesting because, like, I'm not that way at all. I need to throw. Yeah. Like when I'm in middle, like, you know, going into September when you've got games every weekend, right? I might hit the gym once or twice, but I'm throwing 3 to 4 times. So yeah. I'm like the complete opposite. But I actually had an athlete who graduated last year who was very similar to you in some aspects, at certain events, I should say, uh-huh. like the shot put. He didn't throw the shot put for like 2 years. And then I was like, you know what? Let's play with it.
Yeah.
He within 2 weeks of training, he PRs. And I was like, what the heck? Okay. So now you're going to throw a shot put. And we trained like a normal thrower, and his marks, like, honestly, they kind of either stayed the same or got worse. And so we put it down. I was like, all right, well, let's just focus on the others. And then we'll pick it up for conference and see what happens. And then we pick it up the week of conference. He goes to conference and PRs again. I'm like, do you just not have to, like, do we need to do this with all events? Like,
It is a weird thing. And I can never really explain it for myself. I don't think I was overworked. Like, I don't think I was like, oh, I need a rest because I would still practice every other event. But like,
yeah.
For some reason, having that time off made something else click. And I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe it was practicing a different event that made something click. In a different event, but it's weird, and I couldn't explain it myself. I just knew it worked. I was like, okay, we're gonna keep doing this. But then I'll go back to hammers. With hammers, it's like, this is something I need to work on because the time off did not make me better.
Yeah, no, for some reason Scottish hammer, that's I was the same way. Like, I put a lot of focus into the weights this off season, obviously. And it worked, and my hammers kind of suffered. And then a couple weeks leading up to Worlds, I was like, I gotta fucking practice hammers, because if my hammers don't improve, I have zero chance of winning, and maybe even podium, depending on how bad they are. So I actually started practicing, and that's when I had the, you know, the 2 massive PRs. So,
and that's when Damien gave us both tips, and we were like, oh, we figured this out.
See, that's the messed up thing, and Damien, he's learned his lesson. He wasn't even giving me tips.
No.
he was giving someone else tips, and I was just behind him listening to him talk. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah. Write that down. Yeah, no, poor Damien. Poor Damien teaching everybody else and getting jumped.
Yeah, right? That's funny.
But, yeah, no, I think as it is right now, I think the key for you this year, right? I guess, so we're not in 25 yet, but I think the key for you next year is hammers again. Like it was.
I think
for
so.
I think your hammers, if you can get those to place third in both, I think you'll be sitting real pretty.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's kind of what I've been thinking about for, you know, leading up into this off season. And I've been working a lot of my limiting factor with the hammer seems to be shoulder flexibility. So as part of my off-season training program, it's been a lot of shoulder core flexibility kind of stuff, just to kind of loosen that up before I actually start throwing again. So I can work on the timing and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to see just what everybody does. I know I'm helping Glenn a little bit with stones, cause that's his weak spot. And I'm like, yeah, send me a video and I'll help out. I'm fair game right now, dude. I can't review everybody's video, but you know, obviously yeah. I'm completely willing to pass on what I know. And I've never been a coach per se, but so sometimes my explanations might get a little bit weird, or I'm not really saying it quite technically correctly, but, you know, it more comes from experience rather than a coaching background.
Yeah. No. I think, have you ever thought about like offering some kind of like coaching service to like amateurs, things like that?
I have. I thought about putting like a WOB book together. I'm like, how much this would be taken seriously? Because they're like, oh yeah, I'm learning WOB from John. I'm not 6'8", but you know, he's got to learn something. But I've thought about it. It'd be interesting now trying to find the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot more time than I used to because I'm not going to the gym, but or at least not as much. But at the same time, it's like, okay, not all the time that I freed up is mostly going to spending time with my son and, you know, watching him in the afternoons, taking him to a park or something. So when he's a little bit more not terrible toddlerish, I might be able to do something like that, to where if he can sustain his own entertainment, I can.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to look at this video really quick.
Yeah. But I've been toying around with the idea. I put out a poll a little while ago, just seeing what kind of interest there would be. And I got a decent, sorry, my dog's barking in the background. I got a decent amount of like positive responses. So, it's just, you know, as someone who is a coach and my season begins in 2 weeks, my time becomes very limited from January to September. So it would be hard, but
yeah, we all have our actual jobs that we have to do. And
yeah,
your job is coaching, and it's definitely more important that your collegiate athletes get your attention rather than amateurs or even other pros in the Highland Games.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the things that I think about is like, do I want to coach? I don't coach all day. That'd be a lie. But do I want to coach most of the day and then come home and review videos for coaching or write programs for other people? So I've been toying around with it, but I think I'm going to do it. I just don't know when or how, but I think I'm leaning towards it.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. It's a good way to keep your mind in the game too. If you're constantly thinking about, you're constantly thinking about already shot put, discus, hammer. And do you coach javelin too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're already constantly thinking about those four events, and it's another thing to add, because throwing's kind of the same, obviously, at its core, over all the events almost. But to add, you know, the Highland Games into that thought process might just be a little bit daunting. Like, okay, I'm already thinking of these four events all day long. Now I have to add another, technically nine, but you know how there's heavy light, so it's not not all nine.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's gonna be hard, but we'll see. I haven't made any official decision yet, but but maybe I'll add you to it, and we'll like tag team this.
Yeah, I'm down. That'd be fun. Do what I can. But yeah, like I said, I'm definitely still gonna be watching the games. I've even thought about going to the local ones that we have here and just fucking around and being like, you know, this is something to keep my mind in the area of the Highland Games, but not necessarily take seriously. And, you know, be like, hey, well, when I did that earlier this season, I told them, I was like, hey, don't write any of this down. This is a tune-up game for me. I mean, you're not supposed to put any of this into NASGA because I'm a pro. This doesn't have to do with any rankings at all. Like, yeah, okay, cool. And, you know, 3 days later, I'm like, oh, there I am in NASGA. didn't want this, but I'm going to take this down really quick.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You can always do, like, the MC thing.
I don't like talking in front of large audiences.
No, I get that. That's why, I mean, I don't like talking in general. So this whole podcast thing is like way out of left field for me.
Yeah. At least with podcasts, I mean, we're still just talking to each other and then eventually it gets thrown out to
everyone
who wants to listen. So you're not trying to address a crowd and go through the history of the event and probably get things wrong because I feel like the history of the events is kind of known, but also like, well, it could be this.
It's all bullshit. It's all bullshit.
I did want to say that, but I feel like that's it.
But for, I mean, like you go to four games and you'll hear four MCs say four different things. So
yeah,
it's all BS.
Like I heard the other day, like Caber was a way to climb or to scale castle walls. They would flip the Caber and climb. I'm like, what?
That makes no sense.
Then I heard it was a way for like logging to like, you're flipping the Caber to get it over a stream. So you're trying to land it so the other end is on the other side of the stream. That's why you want to land straight. And I'm like, that could be it. I don't know. I don't know any other reason why somebody would pick up a log and try to flip it end over end and somehow score it with accuracy rather than, you know, weight or length of the caber.
Yeah, none of the explanations for the caber make sense. Any of the explanations that you hear for the stones or the weights or weight over any of that stuff, the hammer, that all anything that you say, you're like, okay, that makes kind of sense.
Yeah, I can understand those. Like, hey, yeah, this is actually, I just heard on Joe Rogan's podcast, he had Bert Soren on and he was talking about the Highland Games. I was like, oh, like this is cool. Keep going. And he was talking about the stones and how it was like a family stone of when you could throw this further than the patriarch of the family, then you know you can start your own family or something mm-hmm. like that. And I'm like, that sounds very plausible. That sounds right to me. Yeah,
that checks. Yeah. Speaking of that podcast, they spent way too little time on anything Scottish and talked a lot about hunting.
I know. I was like, I was on the edge of my seat waiting for him to keep diving in, and we got that little snippet about the stones, and I was like, keep going. Let's keep. I'm waiting for more. I didn't realize he was a competitor back then. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
that's super interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, he threw pro Highland Games. He also threw, you know, he was a quote unquote pro hammer thrower.
Yeah.
I was every time it got brought up, I thought they would go a little deeper and deeper. But
I know. No. I was hoping they would mention like Matt Vincent or something because he was already
on
the podcast. I was like,
oh, yeah. Like, yeah, and Bert and Matt are friends, and I mean, like Sorenex even sponsored Matt for a little while. So, I was hoping that too. Like, if they got that brought up, and then maybe bring Matt on, that would have been really cool. But
yeah, Joe didn't seem super interested. He's like, yeah, whatever.
No. he was interested about Scotland and like the history and things like that, which is very Joe Rogan. But no, not much about the games. He didn't give a shit.
Yeah. Yep. And that kind of goes down to the whole like, I don't know, just the marketability of the games. It's like, a lot easier to market strongman. That's kind of been talked about ad nauseum, but you know, we can always go into that if you want to.
100%. I mean, I've been working on trying to bridge the bridge the gap, I guess, between strongman and Highland Games. In my own way, and I guess I can mention it because, I mean, it's not going anywhere this year. I was working with, I was talking to Kerry Shaw about getting the games at the Shaw Classic. And she was extremely receptive. She thought it sounded awesome. It came down to the location that they have it, the Blue Arena in Colorado. They do have a field out there that would have worked fantastic. And we even talked about, you know, having most of the games out in the field and then having a couple of key events in the arena, like, you know, have a caber and a a sheaf or something like that in the arena. But the facility charges a buttload of money for every little space that they rent out. So to rent out that entire field was not something that could be feasibly done this year. I don't think it's dead in the water. It's dead in the water for 2025, which is honestly kind of a good thing, because it does conflict. It would have happened really fast. And then when they announced where Worlds was going to be, Worlds is going to be at Maine, and that's the same weekend as the Shaw Classic.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so
I'm like, I can't really do that.
So that wouldn't have worked. But hopefully, you know, in the next year or so, we can get that going. And, you know, I do like what they did at the Rogue Invitational. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they got a good crowd.
Good foothold, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they did an awesome job. There was we can dive into this if you want, but there was a little controversy is not the right word. Confusion.
Yeah, confusion. I'd say confusion.
I mean, confusion.
None of us knew about the game until like the week before. We're like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I wouldn't have gone anyway. I'm like, obviously, I can't. I mean, okay, a week's notice to go to Scotland. I don't have nearly the money or time. And apparently, it was, you know, quid pro quo. So it's like,
yeah,
the athletes all paid their way to get there. I'm like, I definitely could have done that.
Yeah.
But you know, it's one of those things where like, yeah, maybe mention it to the top three, or I guess Glenn went, but maybe mention it to the top American throwers that, you know, won Worlds and Nationals. And it's like, it might have come across my desk. That might have been a good way to bring it up.
Yeah, and I think Matt, you know, Matt's a very high ranked pro, and he probably should have been at Celtic this year. That's a whole nother discussion. I think he obviously went over there, and I think he did really well. But it was the fact that nobody approached anyone from outside of their bubble was kind of weird to me. But I hold no grudge. I like what they did, and I hope it continues to grow, because we do need to bridge that gap between. Strongman and Highland Games.
Overall, it was good for the games.
Yes.
100%. It was a good thing that happened for the Scottish Highland Games.
Yeah. And especially being in Scotland, like, come on.
Yeah, you just got back from Scotland, didn't you?
I did, yes. Yeah. I missed the Rogue Invitational by like 2 weeks.
2 weeks? I thought you were like a month later.
No, it was close. I probably could have made the adjustment, but
could have moved it a week forward. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. But, no, I mean, yeah, Katie and I went to Scotland, and, it was, dude, if there was any feasible way for me to up and move to Scotland, I would be there tomorrow.
Really?
I absolutely love that country. The people are awesome. I'm a huge nerd for like old history. So just being in a place that is that old and, you know, celebrates it being that old, is something that really connects with me. So I absolutely love spending time in Scotland. If I could be there, if coaching college track and field was a career over there, I'd be there as soon as I could.
Yeah, no, I still have yet to go, and that sounds amazing. Maybe in 26, maybe 26, 27, if everything pans out, I'll make that trip. But everything I've heard from you and from Colin and from everybody who's been over there, like, yeah, come over. I think part of it, like when we had Jamie Gunn over in Pleasanton for a bit, they're probably like, yeah, let's get this guy over, see if he's actually clean. let's see if he's clean by Scottish standards.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like me being like, yeah, sorry, I can't do it. They're like, yeah, this fucker. He's yeah, probably fuck outside. I'm like, guys, I promise, I swear.
No, and even like the first time I went was four games specifically, but this time was literally just, I think we were there 7 days, and it was just experiencing the country away from the games. And that definitely solidified that I like it not just because of the games. Like if there was ever a way for me to move there and I did, it wouldn't be because I want to compete in the Scottish Highland Games. Like it, that would be,
that's an aspect, but that's not the whole thing.
That would be like secondary or tertiary. Like it, that's way off to the side. Like that has, that would have nothing to do with it. And this trip actually like solidified that for me.
Yeah. I own 1 square foot of land in Scotland.
Oh, did you get one of those? Like, are you a lord?
I'm a lord. Yeah, technically. Oh. I'm never going to say that seriously. But my buddy got that for us, for my wife and I back in like 2021. He was like, here you go. You have land in Scotland. I'm like, I'm going to build a block, a 1 square foot block, and stand on it and be like, this is my residence.
You need to go over there and then introduce yourself as Lord Van Dien.
I'm the Dutch Lord of Scotland. The American Dutch Lord of Scotland.
Just go up to like Kyle Randall's and be like, are you a lord? Because I'm a lord.
Kyle owns land over there, doesn't he? Isn't that technically just being a lord? Or is he, I don't know his living situation.
I don't know if he owns his house or not, but you can ask him.
Like, are you a lord? No.
Loser.
Off.
I don't even live in this country and I'm a lord.
Look at that. Anybody could be a lord here. rub some dirt in your eye. Man. No, that sounds wonderful, honestly. I still have yet to go overseas, actually. I was supposed to go to Pfeffer in 2020, and that all went to shit.
Yeah.
Because let's see. Who Kyle McKelvey won the amateur national championship, and then he was having a baby so he couldn't go. And so Francis called me, like, you're up. And just put this out in the air for anybody looking to do that. They say all expenses paid. Heads up, they say all expenses paid, but it is not all expenses paid. Like, so you'll get your hotel, which is great. I mean, this is all refers to the Pfeffer one. I'm not sure about, like, don't they do ones in Chile and everything?
Yeah, the Chile and I think New Zealand or some shit, like Australia. Yeah. Separate, yeah.
Exactly. So specifically about the one for Pfeffer, it's like, they were like, yeah, it's all expenses paid. Ends up being, okay, your food and your room in Pfeffer is paid for the time you're there. But you get like 3,000 Swedish krona. It was like $700 to fly. And I'm like, oh. Okay.
What? So that's actually changed, because I went in 18, and they were like, "Oh, you'll buy your flight, and then we'll reimburse you." And I was like, "Listen here, lady, I don't own a credit card, and I make like $30,000 a year. So there's zero chance I'm buying this flight." So they actually bought it for me.
Could you front it?
So like, yeah, like, so I literally, it was all expenses paid. I paid nothing.
Oh man. Okay. So yeah, something must have changed, or maybe it's just whatever. Future advice is, you know, any amateur looking to do that, just, you know, prepare for anything. Don't be completely absorbed with all expenses paid, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And the next year actually, was the year that, Colin and I went to Scotland, and we were there the week before. We were there for 2 weeks before Pfeffer. So he actually invited us to come out and do like a clinic. Okay. So he was like, oh yeah, we'll pay for you guys since you're already over here. We'll buy your flight and everything to come over. Long story short, like kind of like what you said, that our hotel was covered. That was cool. Food was covered, obviously. But we never got reimbursed for our flights. So
yeah,
not mad about it. It was like $150 to get from Scotland to Norway, but
oh, that's not.
No.
Yeah,
I, no.
That's nothing compared to a $2,000 international ticket. That's,
yeah. But no, that was, and that's one of the reasons that Katie and I actually went to Scotland that last week. You know, I've been trying to go back since 19, mm-hmm. And every time I look, it's always during the summer, because I always think, like, you know, go so I can compete and make up some of that money. Even if I bring my wife as like a vacation, I can at least make up some of the money that I spent to get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most of the time. Yeah. Most of the time tickets are around $2,000 a piece just for your flight.
Yeah.
So I just happened to be looking one day like, oh, you know, I have that week of Thanksgiving off. Like, wonder what prices are. Turns out, like, if you want to travel in November, it's like $700 a person versus $2,000. So
That's way more. Yeah, that's less than a flight to fucking Pennsylvania for me this year.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I spent more going to Victoria. So yeah, yeah, it was like a no brainer. I was like, you know what? We're just gonna do it. Fuck it.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds awesome. Man, yeah. I got an invite. Well, not an invite, but I got a text from Ray. Like, hey, are you like done? I'm not sure, because they're gonna have women's worlds in 26. So he's like, he's letting me know. He's like, we'd still like to have you out in May. And I'm like, you know, if I if I do one pro game like that, it would be worlds, I guess. But that's just not who I am. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't do one big game. Because I know I'm not going to compete as well as I want to. And then I'd just be upset. I'm like, man, I did this one. So I'd have to do like all of them. I'd have to have a whole another season. I'd have to keep going.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't. If I accept this, I'm all in again.
Yeah. So is he saying they're not going to have men in 26?
No, he didn't say they're not going to have men in 26. He said that he's not sure what the funding is going to be like, because the funding is going to be more towards the women's world.
Yeah.
Which, man, that's a hard time of year to have a world championship.
Well, Victoria's hosted men's worlds too, so.
Yeah. I was about to say, I forgot they've done that before too, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, another topic to get into. Speaking of worlds and nationals, I know we've texted back and forth about this, so I'm not sure if that information is confirmed or not. I feel like it was just in that group chat we heard that Celtic was now going to be open to anybody who's competed in the US if they've had a high enough mark.
Yeah. So what they were saying is so Nazgûl is dead. Essentially,
long live heavy athlete.
Yeah, heavy athlete is taking over at least the ranking systems for lightweight worlds, masters worlds, and Celtic, which is good because, I mean, Celtic hasn't had an actual ranking, like an online ranking system you can look at in like 3 years.
Yeah, so they've told me, or Jane's told me, that they've struggled, or struggle's not the right word, but they've had to more meticulously go through the database to kind of use their scoring standards to make their decisions.
Yeah, because there used to be an actual like page for Celtic, but that something about the person that was running it lost access to it. I don't know what the whole story is, but basically it wouldn't work anymore. So now they're going through Heavy Athlete, and in those conversations, when Heavy Athlete took over, apparently they were told if international athlete competes in a North American Games and gets onto Heavy Athlete and is ranked high enough to be into Celtic, they will be invited to Celtic. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Let's see. How long ago was it that they had international athletes there before? Because Francis competed there. And I don't know if he was
that had to be
America at the time, or if he.
Because
the same way, like where
Gunn, he also competed there.
Okay, so that it must have been a time when it was what they're going to go to again, of where, you know, hey, if you have a high enough ranking, you can come to Celtic.
Yeah, and I don't mind it per se. You know, it's how it used to be. And then some Americans fought for it to just be an American championship for one reason or another. I heard it had to do with money, but you know, and it stayed that way for a long time. I kind of liked it that way, not because,
you know, hate supporters. I know.
I hate them so much.
Glenn, no. Listen to this, dude, you're the worst.
God, Glenn, Vlad, you know, throw Kyle in there, freaking Sinclair, you know, Jamie, fuck them all. Yeah,
a whole lot. Now, I think we're on the same kind of page. I'm conflicted about it. When it comes down to the athletes, there's not a single person that I'm like, no, I don't like that guy. I enjoy hanging out with just about everybody in the games, but it did feel cool to have a legitimate, more so agreed upon American national championship. It's like, you have so many games that are quote unquote championship games. Pleasanton's a championship game. Mm-hmm. Enum Plaza, North American championship game. So it's like, you know, technically that would be bigger than Pleasanton or even Celtic. Yeah, you'd think. But like the way they did their invites and their whole ranking system was more legit to actually have a claim at the national championship. Like,
yeah, I mean, Pleasanton, when they're not hosting Worlds, they call themselves the national championship, like the heavy events national championship. And it's like, okay, they can be the national championship, but when you've got five foreigners out of the 12 people that are there, is it really a U.S. national championship?
Yeah, exactly. You know? You got five foreigners, and then you have also, you know, Americans who aren't cracking the top 10.
Yes.
Like, it's like, okay, this is, you could have had a better national championship with the top qualifying athletes in the States.
Yeah. So
we're on
that's
what gives Celtic its kind of the credibility of being an American national championship.
Yeah. So I, you know, if that's what they're going to do, you know, let's all go for it. It'll make it a little harder to get into for Americans, which not a bad thing, honestly.
Yeah, it'll just raise the floor.
It'll raise the bar for sure.
Yeah.
There should be a U.S. national championship, like a straight up U.S. national championship.
And like we were saying about having like a maybe, I think this would put a rock in Bill's shoe, but I mean, maybe Celtic does become the national championship the world championship.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pleasanton actually takes the national championship title and has that more consistent basis of being, you know, this is the top American athletes.
Yeah. And that would follow, you know, a lot more of what other sports do. Like you have a national championship, then you have, you know, take the top people and they go to the world championship. I think that would be really cool. Yeah, I don't, I know Bill's got, you know, he likes the traveling thing with Worlds, like, you know, bringing it to, you know, other countries and, you know, spreading the Scottish culture and all that. And
that's not just Bill too. I mean, Bill's following the what's the word I'm looking
for? The model, like the model that Dave Webster kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. He's following that.
Yeah.
Closely and, you know, as he should. It's Webster's Worlds for a reason, but like, it would go against the whole mantra, I guess, of Webster, mm-hmm. of having that traveling games to where he can bring heritage to where did they go before Africa, South Africa, and
everywhere. But let's be real, that hasn't happened in how long?
Six years.
Well, the last time they were even outside of North America would have been what, Halkirk in 16?
Yeah, that's what. Like 6 years ago, because I was curious looking it up. I'm like, how long has it been since it's actually been over the sea and mm-hmm. at least somewhere not in North America? And it's been 6 years. It's been been quite a while.
Yeah. So, I mean, and like. They're not even, it's not like they're going to low established or like creating new games for this either. It's, you know, they're going to some of the biggest games in their area. I mean, like Halkirk is hosting the Scottish Championship this year. Victoria has hosted Worlds many times. You know, everywhere that they've, Loon, Pleasanton, everywhere that they go, they're gigantic, massive games. Obviously, they have the funding to be able to provide a world championship.
Exactly. The funding, you know, the room, the establishment, or the established record, I guess, of being able to take care of the athletes and, you know.
And a fan base, like a crowd that's actually going to be there. Yeah. You know, but one of the things that I've always thought was problematic with the, and that might not be the right word either, but problematic with the world championship was kind of like what we talked about with Victoria. Like one, most of the time we don't know where or when it's going to be until, I mean, this is probably the earliest we've ever learned it. We learned it almost a year in advance.
Yeah. But, yeah. Usually it's like we have 2 months, 3 months before we know where it's going to be.
I mean, I knew where exactly it was going to be in March of last year. So March, April, May, June, July, August, like,
you know, it's more like 5-6 months,
five months. But that's still, you know, especially like me, like I'd already competed once. Like, so, yeah. You know, it wasn't like I'm learning this like early in my off season. So, you know, if it ends up being that, you know, they tell us in January that it's in Victoria, like, you know, that one, that sucks for the whole year. You're prepping to be good in May, and then you still have a whole season to get through. You know, I do think there needs to be a established time. Like, so we know
time of year, like, yeah, kind of like a general time of year.
Well, like Celtic, for example, we always know when Celtic is.
Yeah.
We always, you know, can prepare for when that, like, just like any of these games, we know when Pleasanton is, we know, but we don't know where Worlds is going to be at any of those games until, in my opinion, personally, it's a little late.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also the matter of fact with that is that we all peak our season for Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, like you said, we have a whole another season or whole rest of the season to go through, and it kind of just dies off. Like
it does.
I am like, we've talked about the game that doesn't exist before. that burnt me out. Like I was like, man, I could go for like an off season right now.
Yeah. No, that following Worlds with that game in Montreal, the game that doesn't exist,
never happened.
That was like, I didn't know how I would even be able to compete the rest of the year, honestly. Like,
yeah, no, it was taxing, and then it's just mentally taxing too. It's like, okay, I have, it's hard to keep that intensity. I was like, I can't be jazzed for even Pleasanton or even Celtic, because Celtic was a little easier to get excited for again, but like,
but even then, all like,
the games between, and even Celtic, you're just like, oh man, I've already had my, my freaking major peak of the season, and now I'm just tired.
Yeah. And I know, you know, if any of the Scots listen to this, they're going to just laugh at us because they do like 40 games a year.
Yeah.
That's true.
But they don't have to fly for a whole weekend. That was another reason why I'm like, yeah, I'm all right to take a year off, because being gone for, I mean, it's not a whole lot of weekends for us. I mean, you competed a lot last year. I competed, I think, 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
I think I competed 9 times, but I traveled 8 because we had that one Montreal game. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of the games now, at least in the States, are 2-day games. There's a fair amount of the good ones are 2-day games. So it's like, okay, mm-hmm. if you want to get there at a good time, so you're rested before the game, you have to leave on, for me at least, if I'm going to the West or East Coast, I have to leave on a Thursday, mm-hmm. get there on a Friday, rest up, and if it's a 2-day game, I'm not coming back till Tuesday, maybe Monday night. So it's like the traveling aspect for us Americans takes a toll, and then also, you know, that doesn't even show the time you spend training. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. the hours in the gym you spend, the hours out in the field, or maybe the hour I spend out in the field. But yeah, you know, it's a lot, and it's it would definitely be easier to compete and to stay in it if I can drive at most 5 hours one way.
Yeah.
And then even make it back the same day if I wanted to.
Oh yeah. 100%. And that's like, you know, you talk about that stretch after Worlds, you know, like for me flying from Colorado to the East Coast of Canada and then doing 2 games, flying home, flying back to the East Coast of Canada the next weekend for Fergus.
Oh yeah, then, you did that.
Yeah, and then 2 weeks later was Pleasanton, and then I had a nice little break of a home games in Estes, and then I go to Loon in New Hampshire. So again, all the way across to the East Coast, and then the week after that, Celtic. So it's like, you know, almost 2 months of leaving Thursday or Friday, coming home most of the time Monday.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, you know, work in between that and training in between that, it does get it can be kind of taxing with all the travel, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I'd get done with games and come home and be like, okay, that was obviously a lot of fun. It always is a lot of fun, even if I mm-hmm. do have that like self-actualization in the middle of games. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? Even if that happens, it's still like, okay, I had a great time. I made money, but I'm getting home and I'm like, okay, I'm exhausted and there's no break. It's like, I'm exhausted, back to work, back to taking care of the child. And it's a lot. I'm like, okay, I'm good for a break. I've made my mark in this sport. I could take a year off and come back if I want to. And I know on a personal standpoint, I've accomplished many things that I could probably do more and I want to do more, but for now I'm happy of taking a break. I can put it to the wayside for a little bit.
So if you were running Worlds let's say there was a governing body, which there never will be, nope. But let's say there's a governing body, you get to control where and when Worlds is, where and when, you know, U.S. Nationals is, things like that. What would you do?
Oh, man, you're asking an athlete's perspective on something that's an AD's. It's good to have both experience, I'm sure. Like, I think some of the best ADs were also athletes, so they know
100%
how to take, like, you take Detroit, for example. That's a game almost entirely for athletes, I guess, and the way they've decided what events are. I mean, you only throw lightweight, you don't throw sheaf.
Mm-hmm.
I can't exactly remember what ones you do throw, but the story I've heard between that one is that, like, you know, that's a game made for the athletes. Like, you don't have to worry about bringing a sheaf fork, super easy to travel. If I had to do it, oh man, Worlds would be the last major pro game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably have more pro games after that if people want to go, but, you know, it'd be somewhere later in the season, maybe the time Celtic is, depending on location, right? It'd be somewhere that has pretty good weather all the time. Mm-hmm.
That would be the downfall about having it at Celtic. Like, Celtic's had some beautiful years, and when it's gorgeous, really drop some bombs there.
Yeah.
But you are kind of rolling the dice in that area with weather, and like the last 2 years in a row hasn't been great weather, and the marks kind of show it. But I still think that for the most part, you know, it kind of, at least the top four probably panned out the way it would have, even if everybody was dropping bombs.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there might have been a mix up between Nick and Damien. You know, Damien was also semi injured, so, you know, who knows, but it still kind of played out the way it should have. The marks just weren't there.
Yeah. I mean, 23 was the year we absolutely got rain, like, drenched on. And I think that affected some things. I was also injured. So, I mean, complete congrats to Damien for winning that one. No excuses on my end. I mean, as I'm kind of making an excuse right here, but he's a phenomenal athlete anyway. So it's not like, couldn't have ever happened. He did it. But it was definitely one of those things where, like, yeah, this rain is really fucking with me. But we're all competing in it. It's the same for everybody. So it comes down to who's more ready for adverse weather. And that, I don't think, if you really want the bombs to drop and you really want great marks, that try to make that not a factor.
Yeah. Like,
tried to make it so that, hey, we have a location where we don't have to worry about getting a monsoon this time of year, usually. Yeah. But
I think the issue with that is, like, that time of year, there's not much else going on other than, you know, like, you look at, like, September, there's the four major games, and that's really it on, like, the professional level. There's one, like, I think Wisconsin might be the same weekend as Pleasanton, like, things like that. But if it's not at one of those, let's just say four locations, I mean, Loon has never been a place to drop bombs. The field doesn't support it. The weather's. So, like, if you're trying to get the best marks, I don't think Loon's the answer. I think, you know, Estes can be kind of cold, but at the same time, for the most part, weather there is pretty consistent. It's a very throws friendly field. Yeah. I think that would be a good spot. Pleasanton, I think, will be a good spot. You got to deal with the heat, but I think dealing with the heat is easier than dealing with torrential downpours and things like that.
100%. You at least have your footing in the heat. I mean, you might have an extra 2 liquid IVs, but you'll make it through.
Yeah.
Maybe like a week after Estes, or not Estes, a week after Celtic, maybe like sometime in October in like Texas, where, you know, Texas still has pretty damn good weather in October.
Mm-hmm. Well, but you're talking about either creating a games specifically for this or finding a very small games that, you know, I think, what was it? Like San Antonio had one in October. You know, I don't know how big that games is, but I think they had their first pro class ever this year. So, yeah. You know, maybe that is, maybe that is something that can come down the road eventually, but I don't see it straying away from the traveling model anytime soon.
No, I don't think so either. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out in the next 2 years of what's going to be the legit national championship, what's going to be, and how Worlds is going to play with it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, if I'm going to be right out in front there, like, you know, when I was talking to the Shaws about the Shaw Classic, like one of the things in my mind, now this doesn't solve the issue of it being the end of the year, but if that can get established on a stage as big as the Shaw Classic, which is, in my opinion, I think it's going to overtake World's Strongest Man here in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Did they have, or was it, am I thinking of Rogue that handed out the biggest purse for strongman?
No, that was, that was the Shaw Classic.
That was
the
Shaw,
for sure. Yeah.
It was like 100 grand, right, to win.
Yeah. So
nice.
Right? Gosh. And that's one thing, like trying to explain to the Shaws about what pay looks like for pro athletes, they're like, wait, that's it? I'm like, yeah. That would make everybody happy. If you did this, that would make everybody happy.
Right. It's pocket change compared to what the strongman is getting paid. And it's like, bro, if I made $5,000 in the game, I would be stoked.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Stoked. I'm like, yes, every year, take me back to this one.
But if we could get it at a stage like that, you know, I think, you know, if we could establish it, you know, Shaw Classic's the same weekend every year, so you know when it's going to be. There's already a massive crowd, a massive sponsorship, and then if I hopefully in the next couple years can get some additional sponsorships to cover things like, you know, purses and, you know, that extra rental of the fields and things like that. And then maybe work with Bill to see if that's something he'd be interested in doing. I think that'd be really cool.
I think so too. It would be interesting to see how Bill would work that, since Rogue is already sponsoring. Did Rogue sponsor Shaw Classic?
Rogue sponsors the Shaw Classic.
Okay. I was thinking there might be confliction there because Rogue has their own strongman. So it's like they're already a part of it then. So it's really not that big of a deal.
So Rogue sponsors Shaw. Rogue sponsors the Shaw Classic. All their gear is either made by Slater or Rogue. So yeah, I mean, as far as there's no conflictions there, it's, you know, it's getting it up and going and, you know, getting the powers that be to see if that's something they'd be interested in. And I know some of the things might make it a little weird. Like, I would love to have at least one, if not two events in the arena in front of that gigantic crowd.
Yeah.
I think it would bring a lot of exposure to the Highland Games. If you could do like a Sheaf or a Caber, something that is unique to the Highland Games. They're crowd pleasers. Everybody knows what a turn is. Everybody knows when it goes over the bar.
Yeah.
You know, weight over bar is already a strongman event, so they're not going to, nobody's going to care to see people go 17, 18 feet when Thor can go out there and go 22. So, you know, doing events that are specific to the Highland Games, that showcase the Highland Games in front of that crowd, would be huge for this sport. And especially if you tag on the world title aspect of it, I think that would be really cool. But that's a good point about
not having weight over bar in there, because that's where I went to immediately. But then, like, people are going to watch, you know, me hit, or I mean, maybe in 2 years, 3 years, people would watch me hit 18 feet and I'd be stoked. And then Well, here's Half Thor.
Well, and that's
this little John bitch.
They did that at the Shock, or not the Shock, they did that at the Arnold in 19. They had Thor versus Spencer.
I remember that, yeah.
And you know, like
good job, Spencer's, Spencer, but, you know, yeah. Thor's Thor.
Spencer's a damn good thrower, and he's the best weight thrower in the history of the Highland Games. And he was damn near, I think if I remember right, he was close to breaking his own world record on that stage. And then Thor beat him by 2 feet.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I guess this is the most statically strong event for the Highland Games, and almost all strongmen will prevail in this event. Or I guess at that level, strongmen. I've definitely beat strongmen at weight over bar before, but
yeah, but strongmen like,
at that caliber, they have a huge advantage.
Yeah, and everybody knows that because they've seen Thor break the world record. They've seen those guys break the keg over bar world record. So they know, like, you know, you see some Highland Games guys going 17, 18 feet, no one's going to care. But you see someone throw a sheaf, you know, 36 feet, that's impressive. That's, you know, impressive. You see,
that's something that the strongmen
can't do.
Yeah, I was going to say, I shouldn't say can't do, but they definitely can't. There's no way, at least at the very beginning, they're not going to do that.
Okay, so a strongman, let's say they just open it up for all the strongmen to come do. Okay. A strongman never doing the Highland Games can walk out to weight over bar
and be great
and be pretty damn good.
Yeah.
None of them are going to walk out to a sheath standard and throw well.
I would put it at like 26 as the highest they could probably hit. And that, I think that's even pushing it.
That's generous, but yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. And then like the caber too, the caber is such a unique event. Like you can't, for the most part, you can't just power that thing, especially if it's a pro size caber.
Yeah, and we saw that in, you know, Strongest Men in History with, you know, Brian Shaw and Nick Best and Oberst and Eddie Hall. They got handed cabers, and I was like, did they even show them how to do this? They looked terrible trying to flip a caber.
I don't think they showed them how to do it, and I don't. Yeah. They said it was the game's caber. There's no shot. I've watched that episode a couple of times. There is no shot that is the Braemar caber.
Yeah.
No, there's no shot.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember who turned it, but like someone turned it and it like damn near turned completely in the air, barely touched the ground. Like, there's no chance that's like the actual Braemar caber.
No. And like, you can open up the events to strongmen, but then you'll have the situation like Half Thor did in Pleasanton when he broke the record the first time for weight over bar. I wasn't there for this, but everything I've heard was that he was doing the events, started with stones, was getting kicked in the balls in all the events because, you know, it's just a different technique, different strength. And then he was like, nope, I'm done doing this. I'm going to do weight over bar. I'm going to do the event that makes me shine rather than look kind of like a fool compared to all these other guys that aren't blasting Tren and Test. And
and then the next time he came to Pleasanton, he was there for about an hour, just did weight over bar and left.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, let's do something that would showcase the Highland Games and something that strongman couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And frankly, they wouldn't want to do because they don't want to look weak, I guess, at an adjacent strength sport. Like, you don't want to look be made a fool of by these guys who are half your size. Maybe not half. I mean, 310 pounds compared to 440. But
And I don't want this to be a bash on strongman. I love strongman. Oh, I think strongman's a great sport. I was at the Shaw Classic this year. My wife Katie works it, so like I get some behind the scenes stuff, which is pretty cool. I love strongman, and I couldn't do 90% of what they do, and I've tried.
Yeah, and like it's got its own. I think I've said this before. It is so much easier, and this is why the money is in strongman. It's so much easier to show off a 500 kilogram. I mean, you don't even have to go that high. You could go to like a 400, 900 pound deadlift.
Yeah.
400 kilogram, 900 pound deadlift and be like, show this to the general public. Everybody's gonna be like, holy shit. There's no way in hell I could ever do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You show a Braemar, a 48-foot Braemar, to the average population, they're like, cool. I could probably do that. See, eventually.
I think one thing that I think Highland Games needs to adapt, I don't like the idea of sectors, because fouling because you went too far to the left is kind of lame.
Yeah, you don't want but, collegiate or Olympics throwing.
But having field markers at, you know, 35, 40, 45 feet for Braemar. Yeah. You know, just having those field markers so that everybody in the crowd knows at least what the ranges are. They may not know what is actually good, but they can see, you know, if you're 30 feet away, the difference between a 40-foot Braemar and a 45-foot Braemar is, it's actually hard to tell.
Yeah, you can't, so, you can't really see that very well. That's what Celtic does well, too, is they have the world record out there at a flag so people can see how close they are and how good they are.
But I think it needs to go a step further of, like, actual spots, like, whether it's flags or, like, you know, lines on the field at Celtic would be hard. Just given the field size, there's no flat ground. But, you know, flags are something to show, like, okay, these are the areas of distance. So that way the random person walking by can say, oh, that person just threw it over 40 feet. That person did not. Yeah. Right? So you can actually cheer for who you want to cheer for, or, you know, whatever. You know, I want to see someone throw 45 feet, and then you see it go over that line, you know, you can cheer right away. You don't have to wait for them to read the tape.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But even then, that still goes back to the marketability of it. It's like seeing somebody deadlift 900 pounds is like, there's no way in hell I could do that. Seeing somebody throw a Braemar that far, it's not nearly as like visually astounding. Like, holy
100%.
It's like, oh, that was cool. But it was like, you'll have a lot of people being like, oh, I bet you if I practice, I could probably do that.
And that's where, like, I do like, like when the trig is close to the crowd and we can like walk a heavyweight over and say, hey, pick this up. See how you can do it.
Yeah. I've made that a habit of every games I went to. I think, I don't remember when I started doing that. Personally, like, I know other people have done it before too. I definitely, I'm not saying I started it by any means, but I definitely, if I don't see anybody doing that, I'm making a point to bring it to the crowd and be like, this is what we're throwing. You know, people lift it up like, oh yeah, it's not too bad. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's not too bad until you try to throw it 45 feet.
Yeah.
But right. Yeah, it's something that if Highland Games wants to be more of an attention grabber and more, you know, if it's an attention grabber, it can warrant getting more of a purse and more money involved and more sponsors. It's something that is, I think it's just ingrained with being a challenge to try to overcome that. I don't know if you ever really can. I mean, Strongman has those things too. It's definitely more of a spectacle than the Highland Games. Like I said, people are watching these crazy events and think, oh, there's no way in hell I could ever do that. But even then, I think I remember talking to Oberst before, and I don't know. I actually think this was an interview. I've talked to him about it before, because he actually lives in Meridian. I tried practicing once or twice. Yeah.
Nice.
Great guy. Super down to earth. But I think he actually said this in an interview. He was getting ready for a squat at World's Strongest Man, and he, like, you know, just got out of his mind, started fucking huffing ammonia, like getting ready to do a heavy ass squat. And they're like, all right, commercial break. Yeah. Oh.
Oh, that shit is something that was, you know, I worked World's Strongest Man as like an athlete coordinator for a couple of years. And that's one thing that was weird for, like, it opened my eyes to that aspect of it is, oh, they treat that event like a TV show.
Exactly. You know? And that's what I think the Highland Games would have to kind of be treated more as, is it has to be the attention grabber. I think in order to gain the spectacleness about it and to gain maybe the sponsors, because I mean, if you do like a whole televised event of the games, that's a long day.
100%. I think if they could have a camera crew go out and record Pleasanton and then edit that down to an hour long event, I think that would be fantastic. But I don't want it like
to be snippets, you know, of every throw. Like, all right, here's his turn. Okay, now here's his turn. Okay, now here's his turn.
And I don't want them to be like, okay, here's the order, blank, blank, and blank. And then three throws in, they're like, oh, wait, we got to reset this. You might need to go again. Like, you know, I don't want it to turn into some gigantic production, but if you actually like had the time to actually have multiple camera angles and things like that, and then yeah, edit it down to an hour long show, that could help a lot for sure.
Yeah. And I think there's also ways, there's obviously filler in Strongman too. It's not like every single second is them competing. It's like, okay, yeah, they have a little expositional piece about this athlete. They'll talk to this guy on the field and, you know, go through it. And there's definitely ways you could do that in the games too.
That takes time too. Like for World's Strongest Man, the guys are there for about a week before they're there like 3 days before they actually start competing. They're there a week total.
Doing like marketing, like, and
yeah, they're doing interviews and they're testing equipment, things like that. But one of the, like, there's an entire day of just them doing all the different interviews and a whole media day. So you know, if that's something that needs to be done too, I got no problem with that. But
no, I think that would be an easy thing to do that you can put up doing the games and have a little bit more marketability and more exposure.
Yeah. Especially if you did it like at Worlds, Worlds started on Saturday. I showed up on Thursday around like 2. So like I'm there a day and a half before the competition. So
yeah,
you know, if Friday is quote unquote media day, sure. You know, and I know some games kind of, they don't really do media day, but there's events on Friday, you know, like sponsors and things like that. And you go, yeah. So, so it's not completely foreign to the sport, but
yeah,
no. And that's something I've thought about as well, of like trying to find the money, obviously, to have something filmed, to have, you know, I'd love the idea, and this will never happen. This is probably gonna be, you know, a pie in the sky kind of dream, but I love the idea of like the wide receivers show, the quarterbacks show, you know, the full swing, like those shows on Netflix where they like follow an athlete for a season.
Pilot games.
Kinda. I mean, yeah. I mean, and they have it for all, like the full, I watched the full swing one 'cause I'm a fan of golf. I've watched the quarterback, I've watched receiver, you know, 'cause I love football, but yeah, so anyways.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that'd be good. I think it's just one of those things that you have to figure out the best way to market the games in a way that the average population can appreciate it and say, like, that's crazy. I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks, like, what's that website that I think I don't think this is the only thing they do, but they live stream like jujitsu events.
Core sport,
or was it Flow Sport? I thought it was Flow Sport or something.
So Flow, well, maybe there's a Flow Track, I know that. Okay. Core Sports does a lot of, like, I know that they do a lot of the like they did the arm wrestling thing recently. They've done mixed martial arts, things like that. So I know that's one of them, but there's a bunch of places that do it.
Yeah. Part of me thinks that would be a good first step to have at, like, I mean, having no governing body makes it a little bit more difficult, but having that as an option to more games where people could just tune in and watch on a live stream. That's, you know, not one of the athletes' phone, where it's idle the whole time and people are, you know, tuning in, don't see anything happening for 20 seconds and they drop out.
Yeah.
If you have something more of like a live, you have somebody hosting it, kind of explaining what's going on in a live stream, and something that's more stable and reliable rather than a cell phone service.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a good small step for the games. And you're still only going to appeal to the people who are kind of already probably involved with the games, who already like kind of know what's going on and want to watch the whole thing, versus, you know, taking snippets and making it more of like a production.
I mean, you can do both. I mean, if you can live stream, you can record that live stream and then edit that live, assuming it's good quality, right?
Yeah, very true.
You can edit that down to, then you upload that to YouTube or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But, definitely. I mean, I've thought about that as well, you know, thinking about a lot of the games that we have, we get terrible service at the field. Yeah. But I've thought about even getting like one of those portable Starlinks and getting a decent camera and then having someone, whether, you know, I've talked to my wife about potentially doing it or someone else, you know, doing like live commentary, things like that. And maybe that's something I can try for one of the games this year and see if it works.
Yeah.
But that's so many things we can do for this sport that aren't being done. And I think some people are trying to do it, and I commend them for that. And, you know, hopefully I can help in that aspect as well. But yeah, so it's,
yeah, I remember one time at Estes, I think this was 2021. I think it was my first year, actually. My wife and I went, Rachel and I went, and she was competing. We had two separate days of competing. And I mean, she being a hot blonde chick has a lot more followers on TikTok than I did at the time. I haven't really tried anytime recently. I've kind of just put a couple of videos here and there on TikTok and been like, yeah, whatever. But you know, she had a shit ton of followers, but even then I would be filming her and then I'd kind of see how her phone's doing. And whenever I was on the phone and kind of at least engaging with the people who showed up to watch to say like, this is what's going on. This person just had this throw. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. This person fouled. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Just having somebody there rather than just a game announcer who you might not be able to hear on the phone very well. You can't really see. Having somebody there to pick up the phone or pick up the camera and kind of walk around and show people the field, show people what's going on, rather than just kind of sitting back and being very passive about the whole filming process.
Well, how about this? You and I get together about this, and maybe we talk to, you know, I know you're retired, but,
retired.
But, you know, maybe we talk to Steve about doing something like that and having you be that person for like Pleasanton. And then, yeah, you know, I think that'd be pretty cool if we can have, you know, current reigning 3-time world champion as the announcer for Pleasanton. I think that'd be pretty, or Celtic, or, you know, any of these big games.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I mean, I don't know if I'm there, I'd be like, fuck, I need to throw. I need to be doing this. No, that'd be interesting. And I wouldn't be opposed to that. I'd have to see.
We'll chat offline a little about it. How about that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, we've gone a little over an hour now, and I got a Broncos Chargers Thursday night game to get to. So,
that's right. man, I got Sutton playing on my fantasy team, and I'm playing against somebody who has Bo Nix, and all the balls need to go to Sutton.
Well, that's all he really throws to, so I think he'll be safe.
I love it.
But I appreciate you to being on, man. You know, I think a good conversation, and let's do this again. I think this would be a really good, you know, kind of check in throughout the year. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, man. Especially, I mean, I've like I said, I'm not as busy anymore, so I can take the time. I'd love to chat about what's currently going on in the games, because I'm gonna be watching you, motherfuckers. I'm gonna be watching. I'd be like, all right, you sucked at this. This is what you need to do better. Or be like, hey, this guy's balling out right now. I'm going to be involved some way or another, just at least keeping track of seeing what's going on.
Hey, feel free to send me tips too, dickhead.
Well, see, you're pretty good already. And I guess I shouldn't be stingy with the tips, but I mean, come on. You only need tips and hammer. You got everything.
I was going to say, my hammers are ass. So
yeah, my hammers aren't great either. I just kind of, you know, picked it up for a couple games in the last there. I'm no hammer expert. Go talk to Nick. Nick's your guy.
Yeah, you know, Nick's only about a 5-hour drive for me. I should probably spend some time down there with him. So
the freaking Jimmy GQ of the Highland Games over there, and him and his abs as a heavyweight pro that nobody else has.
It's stupid.
But all right, brother.
All right, man. Well, thanks for being on, but I'll talk to you later, man.
I appreciate it. Have a good one, man.
See you, brother.